Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Yeah!
Romelu Lukaku now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. Hour number two here, and it's brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Hey, a quick word here for Kings Court. Place to be in Edo, Kings Court 903 Hutchins in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. Kings Court, 13 monitors for all your soccer watching desires, covering leagues from around the world. Rooftop deck spectacular. You got a great view of BBVA Stadium. British and Indian pub style cuisine is a winner. Get down there, say hello to Jay. KingsCourtHoustonTX.com. Jay and Megan running the place. Get down there, say hello to them. Great bar and cocktails at great prices as well. And also, Cube 57, home of your Houston Dynamo. Tomorrow night, the Dynamo LAFC on Cube 57. Don't forget to catch it. Pre-game show as well. And we are proud, as always, to bring you the Houston Dynamo on Cube 57. All right, time now to catch up with Dynamo striker Albert Elise La Pantarita. Well, Albert, just describe your header against Orlando City and what that goal meant to you.
It's a happy for the city goal. I back to the goal, maybe one more. Not have a goal, but now my confidence is better. And I'm working hard for enough for the next game, right?
The goal against Chile, too. What did that mean to him against such a big opponent?
Era muy importante. Creo que regresar al gol con la selección me dio confianza. Creo que luego regreso aquí. No jugué contra Cuba. Me tocó entrar desde el segundo tiempo. Comencé en la banca, pero me siento mucho mejor. Me siento igual que antes, creo. Estoy trabajando bien, estoy intentando entrenar bien el año, que es muy importante para mí.
It built a lot of confidence for me. I go in that game, score. It just, you know, I feel like that was a moment that kind of changed my next week. That's what it is now, and then I come back here with more confidence, given my performances there. And Vancouver, I came off the bench with a lot of men back there, and then into this game against Orlando. I just think that was a pivotal point in this year.
Albert Elise joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. The reality is this has been a difficult year for the club. Why does Albert think it's been so difficult?
Sí, por ahí creo que comenzamos muy bien la temporada, luego cuando nos toca ir a la selección prácticamente nos perdimos cuatro partidos al medio de año y creo que eso afectó bastante también, ¿no? Porque habíamos casi cinco jugadores que estábamos en selecciones cuando nos tocó ir a la Copa Oro. Luego creo que cuando regresamos ya no nos pudimos levantar de eso. Empezamos a perder, dejamos de ganar en casa donde éramos fuertes. Tuvimos de hacer lo que sabíamos hacer en nuestra casa y al final eso nos tiene hoy en la posición que estamos, no haber podido sumar puntos en casa.
We definitely showed off on the right foot. We ran out of the gate essentially and just held our own for the beginning of the year, and then you look at how many players left for the Gold Cup and just overall international competition in the summer, and I felt like that really changed the dynamic of the team and just how everyone just was able to adjust because there were so many vital pieces missing. And when everyone comes back, and it was tough to dig ourselves out of that hole, it was the hole that kind of even carried over to our form at home, a place where we were pretty much unbeatable, and then we dropped points there, dropped games there, and it was just difficult to overcome that. That's how we got to this position where we're pretty much in a do-or-die situation for the rest of the year.
Why does he think his personal game? Because you could argue he was the best player in the league in the beginning of the year. Why did his game go down so much? Because this is two straight years, and I think people go, well, if Albert Elise goes, so does the Houston Dynamo.
Sí, creo que ha sido complicado para mí. No creo que me ha tocado en mis elecciones. Pues se espera mucho de mí siempre. Toda Honduras espera que cada partido trate haga un buen partido o anote goles. Cuando las cosas no salen bien, entonces es complicado. Igual aquí en el equipo, cuando las cosas empezaron a salir mal, uno de los primeros jugadores que me tocó venir a la banca, no sé si soy el culpable de lo que pasó, siempre se busca culpables, ¿no? Y al final, cuando el equipo empezó a jugar mal, cuando los resultados no se daban, pues yo pienso que por ahí la culpa recae un poco así, no más sobre mí que sobre otros jugadores.
Yeah, it's something that I'm used to just giving to the players that I have with the national team. Everyone looks for me to score there, everyone looks for me to perform there, and if I don't, I get called out for it. Same thing here. Everyone looks at me to put on the performance to keep the team in those games, and it just hasn't happened in certain stretches. It's definitely something that's been challenging, something that's been tough to overcome, just given that I've been back and forth between two very high-pressure situations, but that's the position that I want to be in. I want to be in those positions where people rely on me, the team relies on me, because I want to perform. I want to be that player that makes a difference, and I know that this year just hasn't worked out that way.
Does he feel it's sometimes too much pressure? Should other people be helping him and players be helping take the pressure off him?
No, hablando del club, creo que la presión siempre ha estado, ¿no? Yo creo que esto es un equipo, somos 11 jugadores, ¿no? Se sabe que muchas veces los rivales estudian muy bien y al final tratan de buscar la manera de detenerme, ¿no? Cuando tengo la pelota, muchas veces tengo 2 o 3 jugadores rápidos enfrente de mí, entonces muchas veces es difícil también, ¿no? Por ahí en defensa es difícil cuando en cada partido, antes de los 15 minutos, ya vas perdiendo el juego. Entonces, creo que para uno como atacante se vuelve más difícil. Si en cada partido comienza perdiendo al minuto 15, 20, 2-0, es difícil muchas veces levantarse.
Okay, I feel like the pressure is felt by everyone. Nobody wants to be in this position. I feel like everyone is very much raising their hand when called upon, just because it's a situation where teams, for the most part, know how to approach us, right? They look at me and they're like, all right, we need to target him. And that gives others the opportunity to play in space and maybe get a little more open than what you would normally expect. And we would hope to capitalize on that. It just hasn't been the case. As far as pressure, it's just something that comes with it, comes with the position as well. It's in the position where I'm going to get their best player and they're going to expect the best out of me. And those are the kind of matchups that we've been having throughout the year. And for the most part, it's been roughly 50-50.
We're talking to La Panterita, Albert Elise, great goal scorer for the Houston Dynamo. Off to an unbelievable start. He's provided us some wonderful, wonderful moments at BBVA Stadium and in Major League Soccer. I have to ask this question. Does he miss Romel Kyoto being on the field at the same time? Because when we saw the Dynamo scoring a lot of goals, a lot of times Romel was on the field and was a good balance for Albert. And is he disappointed in Romel's situation?
Bastante. Creo que sin duda, en los 3 años que vamos aquí, el jugador creo que más me ha asistido es Romel Kyoto, ¿no? Entonces, cuando él está en el campo, yo me siento más cómodo porque sé que tengo que estar listo y un paso de él va a llegar para que yo pueda anotar, o viceversa, yo asistir a él, ¿no? Creo que el mejor año del equipo fue el primer año, cuando jugaba él por una banda y yo por la otra, ¿no? Pero son cosas que han pasado en el equipo y al final todas las decisiones tienen sus consecuencias, ¿no? Y puede hacer que la consecuencia entonces es que estemos en la posición que estamos ahora, por eso.
Yeah, with the last 3 years, it's like the way we've worked together has brought out the best in both players, both in him and in me. I think one of our best years was the first year, where he was on one flank and I was on the other, and it was vice versa, right? I would provide an assist for a score, a little off an assist from him, and we just worked very, very well. I'm definitely very comfortable with him. Just this year, with the way things have worked out, we haven't seen so much time on the field, and, you know, that just comes from various actions, various other variables that kind of put us in that spot where he's just not on the field at the same time, and we just haven't been able to play together as much. But definitely he's a player that I'm very comfortable with, someone that helped me grow as a player, and one that I understand very well. So it's just kind of where we are.
How does he support Romel in this moment where, you know, he's obviously not really involved with the team, he's not playing, he's not making the bench? How does he support Romel, and is it important for him to support Romel?
Sí, no, siempre hablo con él, por ahí trato de apoyarlo y decirle que siga trabajando, que esto siempre puede ser en la vida. Por ahí me gustaría que él estuviera jugando, ¿no? Creo que si llevo 8 goles, creo que si él estuviera dentro del campo en cada juego, creo que llevaría, no sé, a 12, 15, no sé. Siempre que él está en el campo, siempre él me busca para asistirme y yo lo busco a él. Entonces, tal vez todo sería mejor, ¿no? Sabemos el potencial que él tiene, por ahí el club decidió ponerle una sanción, no sé, no sé si es correcto o no, no sé qué exactamente por qué, pero si esa es la decisión del club, pues no, yo solo soy un simple jugador y creo que no puedo hacer nada, pero lo que puedo decir es que, claro, que me gustaría que él esté en la cancha, creo que tal vez el equipo fuera marchado mejor en lo que va el año, ¿no?
Yeah, I keep up with him daily. We talk pretty often. He's encouraging. Given the situation he's in, he's still trying to maintain his fitness, and it's someone that we miss, just given what he brings to the team on the field. The person I'm very comfortable with playing, and I know that he's always looking for me, I'm always looking for him. It's just this dynamic that we've had, not just here, but also in the national team. And, right now we're in a position of what could have been, right? We just haven't seen him on the field, so maybe I'd have 4 or 5 more goals. It's tough to say, just because he hasn't been on the field and haven't had the service from him. I'm really sure I've kind of grown accustomed to over the next few years, but it's something we've overcome, we've battled, just to kind of also put the team in a good position, just given that we've had other pieces missing throughout the year. He's definitely been one of them, and as of right now, it's just one of those positions where it's what could have been.
We're talking to Albert Elise. Albert, I would just say this. You know, look, it's never any one person. There's a lot of accountability that goes around generally in these situations. How much might be put on Wilmer Cabrera? Did he lose the team maybe in the locker room a little bit? Is that possible? Did that happen?
No, creo que la responsabilidad es de todos, no solo de él. No, los que jugamos al final somos nosotros. Él pone los que cree que son los mejores. Y creo que la responsabilidad de todos tenemos culpa en lo que estamos ahora, desde la directiva, los entrenadores, los jugadores, creo que todos somos culpables de eso.
I don't feel it's fair to just put it all on his shoulders, whether or not he wants to offer him or not. He did what he felt was best. He put the players out there that he felt would give the team the best opportunity to win, and they kind of fall up on everyone, right? From everyone on the field to the technical staff to front office. It's just, it hasn't been a good year on the field that led to a lot of different changes and where we are right now.
Last question, Albert. Is Europe still the place you want to ultimately get to?
Claro, claro. Eso siempre ha sido mi deseo, ir a Europa. La verdad que estoy disfrutando de estos últimos partidos. Pueda que estos sean los últimos 3 partidos en el equipo. No sé si como que va a seguir para mí. Yo sigo trabajando. Estoy muy agradecido con el Houston, siempre lo voy a estar, por el apoyo y las enseñanzas que me dieron. No sé si lo mejor para el equipo, para mí es que si yo salga del equipo en enero, no sé. Y ahora con la salida de Wilmer, que yo sé que él fue el que me trajo, ahora el estilo de juego tal vez cambie y tal vez no, mi estilo no entre en el estilo del nuevo entrenador, pero voy a estar agradecido con el equipo por todo el apoyo que me dieron estos 3 años y porque me ayudaron a crecer futbolísticamente.
Absolutely, that is still my goal, and it's something that I definitely want to accomplish. When or how that will happen, that should be determined. I'm still looking straight ahead at these 3 games because I've been committed to this team, and I'm very grateful for how I've grown and what I've gained from my time here with Houston. There's just so much uncertainty coming forward. I'm not sure my skill set will fit with what the future of this club is, and that's something that's going to be determined down the line. So it's something that we'll address with this soon, whether or not what the future is. So it's all part of it, just given the change that's coming and what may occur down the line.
So that was Albert Elise on a number of very, very serious and important topics there. We appreciate his time. Edgar Valise helping us with the translation. Again, a quick reminder, Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway, home of the Liverpool Supporters Group, Marquee Entertainment Center. So when you're driving west on I-10, it's on your right-hand side. 18 TVs, a big screen, Houston LFC hangs out there. It is an absolutely beautiful pub, so don't be afraid to give that place a shot, because you can watch the Premier League there in style. That's Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway. We'll take a break. We have more to come on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. A moment here for our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Now, what I want to tell you about John is he's a big soccer fan. Daspit Law Firm, they're personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com. The good news is they're bilingual. 713-322-HURT. You might get in a car accident, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, you name it. The Daspit Law Firm will cover you 24-7, nights and weekends. Get that representation you need. DaspitLaw.com. It's the Daspit Law Firm. And a big thank you to John. And also, we're going to give Daspit Law Firm the credit for this next interview. ESPN2 tomorrow night, the Houston Dash will take on the Washington Spirit. This game down at BBVA Stadium. Get down there, take this game in live if you can. But right now we've got one of the top players in the NWSL, Rachel Daly, on the line of the Houston Dash. Rachel, thank you so much as always for coming on the program.
No problem. My pleasure.
All right. I want to start off with the England call-up for you and what this means to you. You're called up for games against Brazil and Portugal coming up in October. What does this mean to you after being to a World Cup with England and Phil Neville?
Yeah, it's huge. I think I was saying this earlier. You know, it's obviously the biggest honour for me, playing for my country, representing my country at any level, friendlies, World Cup, anything like that. You know, it's the biggest honour for me. And every time I put on that shirt, I just beam with pride, singing the national anthem, knowing that my parents are there and so proud of me. So, yeah, huge honour. I can't wait to get back with England and obviously two huge games for us.
Rachel Daly will be here in Houston, BBVA Stadium tomorrow to take on the Washington Spirit. Players like Mallory Pugh from the World Cup, you want to get down there. There's tons of World Cup players on both teams, by the way. We'll talk about that on the show. Rachel, when you put on that jersey, like you said, it means a lot, but you have a very different upbringing in the game than a lot of the American ladies in the NWSL. Just speak to that a little bit about growing up in an English culture of football.
Yeah, it's obviously very different. You know, I think the way that the game has progressed over the last 5-10 years is phenomenal. I think the strides that it's made everywhere in the world is so big. But for me, just growing up in England, it's all I ever did. You know, I think a lot of Americans, they are like multi-sport athletes, which I envy. I think that's unbelievable. But for me, you know, growing up in England, it was only ever football. It was the only thing I ever wanted to do. You know, I had to do it with the boys. I had to do PE classes with the boys because that's, you know, that was what was offered for the boys. The girls had to do other sports like netball and rounders and things that you probably never even heard of. So, yeah, I mean, for me, football was the only thing I knew and the only thing I ever wanted to know. So to play at the highest level now has obviously been the goal my whole life.
And how much of an influence in the game over there was male-oriented?
Oh, yeah, massively. You know, I think I was telling James today, we almost had to create a team for me when I was younger, because there was about 5 or 6 girls that just wanted to play and we weren't able to play with the boys anymore. We hit a certain age and weren't allowed to play with the boys. And, you know, I used to go watch my dad play football every week, my brother play. So I was constantly surrounded by the boys and just playing with them. And I think that helped me in many aspects of my life, being around them. And just, I think it worked wonders for my confidence being around them. So, yeah, it was definitely male-oriented.
Now let's take you towards the NWSL overall, and since the World Cup, obviously attendances have rose, but what are some of the other things you see kind of here as we wind down the season?
Yeah, obviously you say attendances have rose. I think the attention that the women's game has got right now is massive. I hope that continues. Obviously we've got a big chunk of an off season now coming up, and no games for, you know, fans to follow along with, but there's obviously international games. I think a lot of girls go and play in Australia. So Yeah, but I think over in America, I think there's been a lot of attention, obviously, with the U.S. winning the World Cup. I think that helps. But it's just progressing day in, day out. People starting to recognize you more, you know. It's grown, I think, massively over the last few months.
Is that something you would do, is play in Australia?
Yeah, I'd definitely consider it. I'd never say no. But, you know, at this point in my career, I don't think it's wise to play year-round. And obviously with national team camps I've been called into, you know, I think my body needs a bit of a rest and almost focus on sort of me and what I can bring to the next season to be the best me individually.
We're talking to Rachel Daly of the Houston Dash. They're taking on the Washington Spirit tomorrow night with Mallory Pugh, a number of internationals scattered amongst both these teams. It's a Dash and Washington Spirit. For the Spirit, still alive, trying to get into the playoffs. The Dash, on the other hand, have been eliminated. This has been a tough season, hasn't it, Rachel?
Yeah, it really has been because, you know, I think we've got a solid squad. We've got unbelievable players. I think one thing that's been a bit tough for everyone is not having a US player on our team, certainly an allocated player anyway. Obviously, we've got people in the pool. But I think that's difficult, and I think that's sort of taken a knock on our attendance as well. You know, a lot of people want to see the US players play, and rightly so. You know, they're World Cup champion. But for us, yeah, we're very disappointed that we don't have one of those players on our team. We're also very disappointed with how the season's gone. You know, I think we hold ourselves to a very high standard, and we haven't lived up to that this season. Certain aspects of it we have as a team. Certain games we've shone and played really well in, and we showed what we're capable of doing. But, you know, the results haven't gone our way. But it's a platform, and it's a stepping stone in the right direction for next year.
I find it strange. You're 3-6-2 at home. You have a better record on the road than at home. What is it at home that makes it very difficult for you guys to get the results?
I don't know necessarily that it's been at home that's the issue. I think maybe more when our back's against the wall, we tend to perform. You know, we've had a lot of road games recently, especially, and I think we've shown that we can perform on the road. I think, you know, we've got to take that momentum into the home games as well. Like, we should be making our home our fortress, and we haven't done. So I think that's disappointing, but, you know, we're just urging for the fans to get around us next season, make it a place that is uncomfortable for other people to come and play at, like the likes of Portland. You know, I think that's the goal for me. Ultimately, I'd love to see BBVA Compass Stadium with thousands and thousands of fans, and we just thrive in that arena. So, you know, hopefully next year we'll build on this and hopefully we'll make it our fortress.
Rachel Daly joining us here. Two road games. You went to Portland, you went to North Carolina Courage, two top teams in the league. 1-0 losses in both those games. You felt those results could have been reversed. There is a bit of a change tactically now, and that seems to be helping out, certainly from the defensive standpoint.
Yeah, I think it's more of a mindset. Yes, there's tactics changed, and, you know, we changed the way we played a little bit, but ultimately the mentality switched, and we've said we've got to find a way to win. Whether that be scrappy, whether that be pretty football, whatever it is, we've got to find a way to win. And I think, you know, we showed in the last two games that we can hang with the top two teams. And obviously beating Utah was huge for us because they're such a good team. And, you know, now we've got Washington coming up. We can't take the foot off the gas. And, yeah, it's been a bit more of a defensive effort. But, you know, if that's what it takes to sort of compete with the top teams right now, then that's what I think everyone's willing to do.
Now, I've seen you back in the penalty area defending. I've seen you doing it real deep defensively, and I know you are an attacker. That's what we see you as when you're on the Houston Dash. So with the change in mindset and tactics a little bit, your attacking game, though, has changed a little bit, correct?
Yeah, you know, I feel frustrated that I'm not in the box as much. I'm not in the areas to score goals where I want to be or where I usually am. But like I said, at the end of the day, it's a team game, and if I can help the team in a defensive effort and win the game still. You know, I think we showed that against Utah. You know, Sophia scored two great goals and I was probably in our own half when they happened. So, you know, it's not about me scoring. It's about, you know, getting the win and then hopefully my performance can help.
Now, you had something very interesting to say to me. You said that, you know, you've struggled a little bit at times and the mindset change. We've just talked about that. But you said at times we were trying to play too pretty. Take our listeners into what that means to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, James is from England. James lives and breathes football and watches it day in and day out, as I do myself. And I'm sure a number of the players on the team do. You know, so playing that pretty style of football is what you know, I class it as someone like a Man City men's team, you know. Pretty football, the passing is unbelievable. You know, you keep the ball really well, you're possession-oriented team. And we tried that, and I don't think it worked as well as we thought it would or where we hoped. You know, teams like Portland that pop the ball around really nicely and play really well, and it looks great. You know, and I think that, yeah, it is great, but it also, you know, you can counteract it and say that we're very expansive in certain areas. And the games that we've lost and the goals that we've conceded, I think, have come from the fact that we've been expansive because of good possession. So, you know, there's pros and cons of playing that way. But I think now, obviously, like I said, the mentality switch, and we've got to sort of throw our ego aside and know that it can't always be that way. And we've got to actually just defend sometimes and be nitty gritty.
You wake up in the morning, what's the first thing you're thinking about?
Football.
That was such a loaded question. You know that. I want to take you back to something you said to me yesterday. And you and I were talking about the lack of attendance at BBVA, and that you and the ladies on the team, you guys are talking about it all the time. You want it to change. You want more of that Portland and some of these other markets, what they have. Well, who wouldn't, right? I mean, you're performers after all. But you said, quote, "We don't want it to be just a little kid's party. We want real football fans." Do you think we have to change our mindset in marketing to include more hardcore fans? Because I'm telling you, I think more male fans now are getting attracted to the women's game.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's the frustrating. I'm speaking solely on part of, you know, on my own behalf here. I haven't spoken to anyone about this. But I think that, you know, a lot of the way the women's game is marketed is targeted towards children. And as much as we want kids there, of course we do. We want, you know, when we see the teams come in, the kids' teams, it's fantastic. They should be a part of it. And I think that's great. But, you know, I think there's something to say about the fact that we had the most attendance when it was 713 day. Now, who doesn't want to come to a game and get cheaper beer and cheaper hot dogs and things like that? Like, those are the things that I think you have to target. And, you know, I think once the men and the true, you know, fans that watch male soccer all the time, I think once they start to see the level of play that the women's league has risen to now, I think a lot of men would be impressed. And I think that's where it's going in England. I think there's a lot of male fans now. You know, there's a lot of media around it and attention on it. And I think that once the fans get exposed to that, they'll love it. But yeah, for me, I think it needs to be all ages, all genders. I don't think it has to be necessarily targeted at just kids. You know, we want people in the crowd that want to be there. We want people who live and breathe for this sport and just solely support football versus, you know, it's just a day out. Or, you know, that is great. Don't get me wrong. It is great. We want the kids to come. We want the women to come. We want everyone to come. But I would love to see a lot more your typical male football fans at the games.
Yep. No, I think this was really eloquently put by you. And I think, why just settle for one group or two groups when you can go after three? I think there's a place for all those fan groups without a question. And I do know a lot of people that were not real big women's soccer fans, and I'm talking about male guys, friends of mine, that now all of a sudden after this World Cup are have a totally different outlook on it. So that's the good news. They're all potentials now. Washington Spirit. Tell me about the Spirit, what you think about them coming into BBVA Stadium tomorrow night.
We want to make it as hard as we possibly can for them. It's not an easy place to come. It's probably one of the hardest places to come in the league in terms of playing. But, you know, the weather, everything, I think we need to start to use that to our advantage. But the Spirit are a great team. They've had some good success this year. They've got some unbelievable players. They've obviously had the new coaching staff put in. And, you know, they're hungry. They want to make the playoffs. And, you know, we beat them on the road, and I'm sure they want to come here and do that to us, and we just have to do everything in our power to stop that and you know, go out and take 3 points from them.
Rachel, as always, thank you very much for coming on the show. I still want to get you in studio for a round table to talk about leagues around the world and just soccer and football in general, and also the women's game, of course. Thank you so much for
coming on
tonight. We wish you the best of luck against Washington Spirit tomorrow.
No problem. Thank you very much.
All right, that's the one and only Rachel Daly. I'll tell you what a great interview she is. Candid, honest, upfront. That's good radio right there. Not because of me, because of Rachel Daly. And that's what we're always looking for here. All right, we're going to take a break here. Perfect time to talk to my friends at Advantage BMW. I've driven a BMW for years. I've leased, I've owned.
Their customer service, amazing. It's the ultimate driving machine. The other thing I love is that when I get my vehicle, they take you from sales, service, and finance right through. It's easy. You get in a vehicle that's safe, drives well, hugs the road. Just an amazing vehicle. It's like a dream getting into that car every time I do. Go down there, say hello to Philip and Justin. We're going to take a break right now. It's a Cube 57 break where you can catch the Houston Dynamo tomorrow night against LAFC.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. Final segment of the night. We're going to make it a good one. Quick word here for Tri-Eagle Energy. Tri-Eagle Energy is bringing the energy on Houston Dynamo game days. They're giving Houstonians the power to win free electricity for an entire year. Now, if you want to learn more, it's POWER, P-O-W-E-R, to 77177. Sign up for any Power to Win electricity plan. You'll receive two Dynamo game tickets, two T-shirts, and you're automatically enrolled to win free electricity for a year each time the Dynamo win a home game. So they got one more home game. It's against the LA Galaxy. It's the final game of the season. Your opportunity to win free electricity. Tri-Eagle Energy will draw a lucky fan or customer to win a free year of electricity. Dynamo have a shot at winning against LA on their last game of the season. So you can win that free electricity, or you can text POWER, P-O-W-E-R, to 77177. TriEagleEnergy.com to learn more. P-U-C-T, hashtag 10064. Great friend of the show. We're going down to Atlanta, Georgia right now. Jason Longshore, who's an analyst for the club and does a lot of media-related stuff for Atlanta United, joining us now. Jason, how are you?
Doing well. How are you, Glenn?
I'm doing great, and I'm always excited when you're on the show. You bring so much knowledge to it, and we appreciate every bit of it. So let's start it off with, obviously, I think what is one of the major talking points right now, the Yosef Martinez second-half injury in their last game. Tell us how the Atlanta's reacting to this, because, you know, this is one you have to put a circle around. This is big.
Yeah, this one's been... It's been kind of a roller coaster of emotions since it happened on Saturday, because, you know, you see the collision, and it's actually Yosef and Pity Martinez who come together, and Yosef takes a very awkward step trying to regain his balance. And I noticed before the ball goes out of play, he's trying to walk it off. He's trying to flex. He's trying to make sure that he's okay. And hobbling around a little bit, like you can't tell exactly what's wrong watching this live. And then play stops, trainers come out, he goes back into the match and then couldn't continue and hopped off to the far side over the touchline and is eventually carried off on a stretcher. And I think that set off alarm bells. After the game, he didn't know. Everything is so immediate. Frank DeBoer didn't know. He was worried about it being very serious. Yesterday, from Frank and from the club, it was a little different conversation. And today, you get the match notes, and he's listed as questionable. I don't think there's much of a chance you see him tomorrow. Honestly, I don't know how much of a chance you see him the rest of the regular season. But I think the initial fear that he's done for 2019 might be gone, and you could see him in the postseason.
So that is a big one. I mean, let's just talk a little bit about his qualities and just this insatiable appetite to score goals. The guy is incredibly brave. His movement, his mobility. You've been able to watch this guy week in and week out. Talk about Yosef Martinez and obviously his just unbelievable finishing ability per ratio of goals to games.
His season this year, he won't win the Golden Boot. He won't have the record, I don't think, at the end of the season. I think Carlos Vela will break that record. But I think 2019 has been Yosef Martinez's best season. I think he's shown so much more than just what we saw in the first 2 years of making that run between the two center backs and finishing inside the six. He's scoring different kinds of goals in 2019. And the goal that maybe is his last one in the regular season in Cincinnati, the second goal up there, is an unbelievable goal. And in my mind, that's the goal of the year for 2019. The audacity just to try to backheel it to himself over his own head and then put two defenders on the ground as he cuts back and has the composure inside the 18. And the finish, I mean, you're talking about a world-class forward, and you're talking about a player that I don't know if we've seen a player with this combination of ability, of hunger, of swagger. I don't know if we've had that player in Major League Soccer before. And in Atlanta, it's been really interesting because you take it to the next step. I don't know if we've ever had an athlete like that in Atlanta before that's delivered on this level and has had this much bravado and this much ability and won things. I don't think there's a comparison in Atlanta sports for Joseph Martinez.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, he's on par with anybody in Atlanta from the stars slash celebrities slash sports sort of angle, correct?
Absolutely. I'll always remember last year, members of Atlanta United's communications team, their digital team, when they were on hand, Joseph goes to a Falcons game. I believe it was one of the NBC games, big primetime game. And the player or celebrity that got the biggest ovation in the building outside of any Falcons players was Joseph Martinez when he goes up on the Halo board. He's beloved in the city. I mean, the Twitterverse for Atlanta United now is arguing about what the statue is going to look like for Joseph Martinez. He's that kind of figure in this town. And it's been really cool to see him come in from being a player who was maybe a little shy, a little reserved after his experiences in Serie A. You didn't really know what to expect with him. You see his friendship develop with Miguel Almiron. And to a point now that he's comfortable giving some interviews in English, and he's comfortable like putting himself out there on social media and really, I think, enjoying where he is in life and enjoying where he is in Atlanta.
So when they acquired him, and we all know the talent he is, I mean, he's just so much fun to watch, and I want to ask you more about that, but the whole speaking English, and did the club kind of really give him a firm nudge saying, look, we'd like you to learn English for a lot of reasons. Locker room, just your everyday life, our ability to market you. Because we all know how endearing it is when somebody, you don't have to be perfect, but if you're attempting to speak the common language of a country, it goes a long way. So how did that work? And then take me into how he is, Jason, when you talk to him. What kind of guy is he now that he's less shy? And what do you like about the way he speaks in interviews?
I don't think the club pushed hard on him there, but I think Joseph actually came in with maybe a little bit better base of knowledge of English. And it was a lot of it just, you know, building up that confidence in some ways. I heard an interview with him, I believe it was in 2017, on a Braves broadcast. He's really developed an affinity with a lot of the players on the Braves, a lot of Venezuelans on the Atlanta Braves, and he's a huge baseball fan. He did an interview in English on their air, and it was really good. I'm like, okay. You know, I think it's still a comfort level thing. I think it's still just, you know, getting that confidence down. But Joseph, I think the biggest difference, and this is probably something coming from Serie A and coming from a club like Torino where he was miscast, he was playing out on the wing, he wasn't played as a true number nine, people thought he wasn't big enough to play in that role. To come in here and talk to Martino, you know, realizing what kind of talent he has, and he displaced Kenwyn Jones very quickly as the number nine for this team and had immediate success, had that hat trick in Minnesota, I think he feels the love that he didn't really get in Italy, and I don't know if he really got it in Switzerland during his brief time there after going over to Europe from Venezuela, but here he feels that love from this fan base and from the city and wants to reciprocate it. And for me, one of the highlights yesterday of you know, following social media and seeing the reaction to Michael Parkhurst announcing his retirement and seeing the love for Parky was Joseph tweeting in English, you know, about you're still our captain, you'll always be my captain. To see Joseph Martinez say something like that to Michael Parkhurst in a public conversation on Twitter is a pretty cool thing. And that's the stuff that makes him such a huge figure here in Atlanta.
All right. So then we're talking to Jason Longshore, by the way. He's the analyst for Atlanta United, does a lot of media work for them down there and really knows the Atlanta market well and the team and also Major League Soccer. And as always, I thank you for being on the show, Jason. So I want to take you into, you know, with all that love of Atlanta he has, we've been hearing there's some possibilities he could be moving on or there is interest in him. How deep do you think those really go?
I think there has to be interest in him. I mean, if you're a club that has money to spend and you're not interested, you're not doing your job. I think it's going to take something special for him to decide to leave Atlanta. I really do. I think the fact that he was in Europe and came to Major League Soccer instead of a situation like Miguel Almiron, where Miguel always wanted to go to Europe and he saw Atlanta and Major League Soccer as a stepping stone to that. Even though he loved Atlanta, I think it was a different situation. Joseph has been there and done that. And yes, it was Torino, but it was in Serie A. If it's a major club with a major role, then I think you might have a real conversation, but you have to beat out what Joseph Martinez lives here in Atlanta day in and day out. He's playing in front of, you know, at least 40,000 fans every game. And when you look at the average, when you open the building up the whole way, it's full. He's playing in a city where he's a superstar, but he's also able to go out to dinner. He's also able to do things that he wants to do. He is, you know, a celebrity in the city without losing the chance to have a normal life. And I think the other element, too, that will factor in as we get a little bit closer to the next World Cup is he also has the opportunity to lead Venezuela to their first ever World Cup. And it's going to be a lot easier to contribute and be part of that team and be fresh for both club and country if he's playing in Major League Soccer. You know, it's a much, you know, easier time to go and play for Venezuela in South America from Atlanta than it is from Europe. I think all those things factor in to make it something that teams are going to be interested, but I think it's going to take something special to pull him away from the city.
Your favorite goal Joseph Martinez has scored?
Oh, I still, and it's probably recency bias, but I think the best one is that goal against Cincinnati because of all of it we saw. That's what's so interesting about it is so many of his goals have been more simple goals, more finishing a great sequence all the way around. I'll take another one from this year that is easily overlooked. It was the goal against Monterrey at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in CONCACAF Champions League, where he combined with Darlington Nagbe to give Atlanta the 1-0 win in that match. It wasn't enough to overturn the deficit from the match in Monterrey, but that was where you started to see, okay, he's more than just that deadly finisher in the six. He's going to be more involved this year in this build-up play. He's going to do more, and he's capable of it, and he can thrive in it.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that in a lot of games. It's a wonderful point you make, and maybe he didn't have to do that with Miguel Almiron and sort of the difference. You know, I think it's fascinating that, you know, all of a sudden the makeup of a team changes a little bit, and all of a sudden these other qualities that maybe – aren't able to percolate to the surface, come out from a player.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of filling that space because in the past it was Miguel Almiron who could really fill the whole center of the park for Atlanta United. And without him, it took a while to figure out, okay, one, Frank DeBoer came in and the same things that Tata Martino said from day one, once this team got going, was we've got to be more secure defensively. And he worked at that from 2017 until MLS Cup in 2018. Frank DeBoer came in with the same mindset. That's what he wanted to do. But once he got that to where he was satisfied, it's okay. How can we start to do some of the things that we've done in the past, but maybe take him to another level? And Pitti Martinez isn't Miguel Almiron. Ezequiel Barco is not Miguel Almiron. Emerson Heinemann's not Miguel Almiron. But all of them are combining in different ways to fill that space. And Joseph Martinez is a big part of that with him dropping in. It's opening different things up, and it's been limited time that we've seen Joseph, Pitti, and Barco together. But where we've seen it, I think Atlanta has looked like maybe the best team in the league this year.
Yeah, they've looked wonderful at times, and I think it's been very interesting from afar to watch the transition from an MLS Cup winning team under Tata Martino with Miguel Almiron to this current version. Now, worst case scenario, playing without Josef Martinez, what changes for you? And, you know, where do you get the defense?
I think it's twofold, because initially we're not going to have Ezequiel Barco in Yankee Stadium tomorrow night. So I think initially you're going to see Brandon Vasquez replace Josef Martinez. And Brandon Vasquez, young player, he's had some ups and downs during his time here in Atlanta, but he's been in a great run of form since the summer this year. He was a huge part of Atlanta's Open Cup win, scoring four goals along the way to get them there. And I think the thing that he has added to his game in 2019 is his movement off the ball. And a lot of what we're seeing from Josef this year with that movement, Brandon Vasquez has replicated very well, and he came in and did it in the match against San Jose over the weekend. When Barco is back, and it's looking like he could be available for the match in Montreal on the weekend, then you have the possibility to go back to something that Frank DeBoer rolled out in the Open Cup semifinal in Orlando, where he started Pitty Martinez and Ezequiel Barco up top, and it was almost like a dual false nine setup, where they were dropping deeper. There was space for Julian Gressel to come inside, for Justin Merrim to come inside, but also for Eric Rometty, Darlington Nagbe, Emerson Hyndman to make runs from the midfield and take that space. And Orlando really struggled to know where the attack was coming from.
That's excellent insight from Jason Longshore, the analyst for Atlanta United down in Atlanta, Georgia. We thank him for that tonight. That wraps it up here. And as always, a big thank you for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Our personal injury attorneys are going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. They are the show's presenting sponsor. Also, as always, Andrew Carlson behind the glass producing, Victor Ariza, and all of you who listened in here tonight. Podcasts can be found at podcastarena.com and on iTunes. As always, remember, soccer matters.